I'm telling you now, this, I'm going to have to really work to make this podcast work.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it just the movie itself or just your tiredness, right?
It was all of those things.
All of the things. All right. Well, I guess on that note, welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. I'm Chris, and sitting next to me on the couch, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Tom.
Hello.
And Colleen's kind of wandering around somewhere with Harvey. May hear from him, may not.
Cleaning his goopy eyes.
Yep.
Which don't work very well.
Yeah, and we finished up watching the 1981 film by Bertrand Tavernier called Coup d'Etochon, which translates to Clean Slate.
Hmm.
Yes. A film that I really enjoyed.
Really?
Yes.
I did not.
This has happened a lot lately, where, like, the ones that you really enjoy, I'm kind of lukewarm on, and, yeah, now this one that I actually really like, you're kind of meh on, so...
All right, well...
It's interesting.
Let's start with a synopsis.
Yep.
And then maybe you can start, and we can try and figure out...
Yeah.
...why we differ.
All right, do you want me to do the synopsis, or
sure.
Do you want this? So the film tells the story of a small town in French-occupied French East Africa in 1938, and we kind of focus on the town sheriff, and as he kind of goes through his routine and his life, and the people that influence him, and how he kind of conducts his life as the sheriff in this town. Yeah.
Yep.
I kind of picked up at the end, like I was going to say more, but I'm like, no, that's
pretty
much
it.
Sort of, you could say maybe a week in the life of the sheriff, and kind of the way he goes around handling his town, cleaning it up, as well as his personal relationships with his wife, supposed brother-in-law, and, you know, the other colonels of the army and everything.
Well, in a way, it's kind of like the Me, Myself, and Irene narrative, because a man's been operating one way, then he kind of has a moment of not really insight, but... just a critical mass point where he decides to change his trajectory and attitude.
See, okay, that's interesting that you... because I kind of had the theory... I mean, I'm not sure if it's true or not, like, but I kind of had an inkling of, oh, he's always been this way. It's just we're getting privy to this point in his life and this week, and we are getting, as the audience, an opportunity to see how he really is. And... because he puts up this brilliant facade, yet underneath it, he's like, I know exactly what I'm doing, I'm playing the fool, and because of that, I'm absolving myself of all these things, and, yeah, actually still running the town, but while still seeming like the really nice guy who can be friends with everyone, and...
Sure, and he's definitely playing the fool.
Yes, yeah.
And because he's been playing the fool for so long, whether he is the fool or playing the fool, he's clearly playing the fool...
Yeah, where we come in.
Yeah, when he begins to just kind of murder people because, you know, his brand of justice is the best justice.
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I think it could be a giant... like, with the first two people that he kills, the two pimps.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a case where Me, Myself, and Irene-esque, where he's kind of hit a breaking point, where he's like, these guys have been just disrespecting me too much... they're disrespecting the town, they're disrespecting the locals, they're disrespecting everything. Fuck it, I can't, he's just sick of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't be bothered with my facade anymore. Street justice, bam!
Vigilante like, style.
Yeah, yeah, being a little bit Charles Bronson there. Mm. Whereas I think everything else is very meticulously planned, and it kind of plays out in this kind of wonderful narrative that, like, he knew it was cause and effect. It was like a butterfly effect thing. He planned out, like, by doing this one act, which is murdering a one of the piece of shits French that live in this small village, who just happens to also be the husband of the woman he's having an affair with. It starts a snowball effect of... he kind of figured it would... this is my interpretation, at least. It would eventually culminate in a giant thing of everyone... him having a clean slate by the end of... like, which also comes into the... title of it all, like his wife and his brother-in-law who paints her asses are gone, the mistress who he's no longer really that into is gone, and he's able to start totally fresh.
Okay.
I might be placing a little bit too much onto the character, but like I enjoyed him so much as a character that I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt of like,
yeah.
He is a smart motherfucker, and I kind of interpreted the way everything is kind of unfolding, he knew it would play out like this.
But that is many, many steps and a lot of psychological variables.
Yes.
Many subjects that are operating that should be kind of at some point random, or at least you can't really foresee what is going to happen at some point, right?
Yes. So, but
I don't know if that's overstepping his, like...
But, like, this is, like, the kind of... I think this might be what informed my opinion of this, is I had no idea, but in the opening credits, it's came up saying that the film is based on the novel Pop 1280 by Jim Thompson, mm-hmm. which blew my fucking mind.
Why, have you read that?
No, but I just read another Jim Thompson book, The Getaway. I read that, like, a month ago.
Okay.
Jim Thompson is a pulp novelist. He would write like trashy crime and noir novels, and the one I read, The Getaway, has been made into the film by Sam Peckinpah with Steve McQueen and Alan McGraw. Fucking amazing movie, amazing book. He did some work with Kubrick, to bring Kubrick up again, because we haven't talked about him enough lately.
Oh yeah.
He co-wrote The Killing with Kubrick, and because he has such a pulp noir kind of gritty cheesy vibe to him, and I think having that informed in my mind that, oh, this is adapted from a Jim Thompson story, that it makes me think the protagonist is way smarter than he's letting everyone know he is, and he's got this elaborate plan.
Mm.
Kind of like a giant pulp crime story.
It was definitely... I agree with you that he's definitely smarter, but to me, there was definitely a surprise when... What's his name, by the way? Let's use some names.
Lucien.
Cordia. So it was definitely a surprise when Lucien just all of a sudden shot those two pimps.
Yes, yeah. Right? Especially, like, it's so wonderfully done because it's this thing of, like, he's still playing the imp. He's playing the weak guy who's like, I'm not going to let you push me around anymore.
Yeah.
Sing. Like, yeah. Obviously it doesn't sound like that, but he's trying to make him sing and, like, show that
he... speak English.
He's like, I'm the captain now. Like, yeah. I'm the one in charge. Yeah. And, But then,
that was a surprise, and yeah. I felt like that moment for him was a turning point, and not entirely planned.
No.
But then at the same time, he doesn't freak out, and he goes, you know, even when his military friend, who has said you should stand up for yourself, man, and push twice as hard back every time you get pushed yourself.
Yeah.
He never, Lucien never freaked out and had that moment of panic. Instead, quite rationally, he goes... There's not even a moment where the film allows you into his mind, where he's thinking about how he's going to deal with the situation. You just presented how he deals with the situation.
Yeah.
Which I didn't appreciate too much, because I would have liked to see his thought processes as opposed to being just on the outside all the time.
But I kind of enjoyed that. It kept you in the dark, and it kept you kind of guessing where this was going and what was kind of coming. I don't know.
That's a different topic, but he managed to kind of mind fuck his friend into going, hey man, if you want a free route down at the whorehouse, why don't you go down there and say you took care of them? We don't know that they're dead. They might just be missing. Just take care of them.
Yeah.
Say you took care of him, and then you get a free route.
Yeah.
And that's going to be great. And now all of a sudden he's off the hook, as if he planned the whole thing.
Exactly. Right? And it starts the snowball effect of, because he knew this guy is an colonel is an arrogant man, and he would easily take, kind of, you know, go for...
the poon.
Yeah, well, not just that, but take the bait of, like, bragging about, like, I solved this problem, you know, Lucien's kind of weak, I had to come in and step up and be the man. He's now implicated himself in murder. And Lucien has effectively framed him for murder.
Yeah, so that guy is not smart.
No.
No one really seemed that smart.
And it also shows that Lucien is.
Mm, sure.
So.
But I still... It's hard to prove one way or the other, I think.
No.
So I don't know if there's much point in pressing... Is he a psychological genius?
Yeah, no, we're just going to go round and round in circles, like, yeah, and there is no definitive answer. It's just, I think, yeah, my take on it was, like, I think because I enjoyed the character so much, I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt and suppose these things about him, I guess, that we weren't told. Like, because I enjoyed the performance, I enjoyed the story, and I loved how he executed it, that I was just like, yep, no, this, I wanted to think it was all planned.
This is I'm going to try and explain why the film didn't work for me.
Yep.
And that was only because if he's such a smart man, how can he... It felt like his morals were just really immature. The fact that he's going around killing because he thinks he knows how to... It's all very selfish acts. They're all... Even initially when he's killing bad people,
yeah.
People that beat women, people that, you know... well, I mean, they're all actually pretty either racist or sexist or whatever. They're bad people, but he's never is he really ever justified in what he's doing at all ever?
No, not at all.
So he doesn't. That doesn't really. So for me, even though he might be a smart man, he's still pretty unintelligent. In that it's like, yes, you're
getting away with this.
Your justice is not real justice. Why are you taking justice into your own hands? Why wouldn't you say, like, these people need to be put on trial? You know, put them through the system.
Yeah.
So that is a core problem for me and the character.
Yeah.
I've
accounted to that,
okay.
Possibly. I totally agree with what you're saying. I think that's 100% right if this film wasn't a pulp film. What it's trying to do, I feel, is it's taking a classic piece of Americana pulp, the Jim Thompson novel.
Yeah, wasn't it set in...
Texas.
Okay, yeah, Texas. It's like an oil village.
Yeah, yeah.
Oil town.
So he's taking this classic kind of crime noir, sleazy American pulp novel and transposing it into the polar opposite location while still trying to maintain the story elements, the character elements, and trying to make a cheesy noir without being a cheesy, like, all the elements while not presenting it as such. That's why I think we've got, like, the jazzy soundtrack and things, like, all these little elements come into play, but they're not explicitly saying that this film is a noir.
So what makes...
So that's why I think he is the flawed protagonist, like you have in all of them. He's the sleazy alcoholic investigator. He's, you know, the corrupt cop. He is that flawed protagonist.
And is that what makes... What can you give me a dot point so we're so super clear? Because I always get confused about film noir.
Yeah.
It always seems to be, like, in the ether somewhere. Like, I don't really know what's going on with it exactly.
Like, film noir is, like, dark, gritty, crime-based stories that have a certain style, a cinematic style and lighting and performance technique. There are usual kind of cinematic tropes, like usually voiceover, lots of smoke and lighting, shadows used a lot in the shots, kind of those elements, and usually a kind of jazzy or piano-driven score. Like,
because a lot of that I didn't really notice.
Yeah,
in this.
That's what I mean. Like, it's using a noir story and retaining certain elements of it to try and see if they can, I think, do a noir without making it a noir.
Okay. Well, I must admit that the locations, the cinematography,
yeah,
the editing, all these long wandering shots.
Yeah, the
really
handheld.
Interesting stuff. I did love that aspect of the film.
And the colour palette as
the
well.
The colour palette with all
like,
the pastel pinks and blues. And...
But, like, that's the thing, like, using the certain tinges of, like, pink in Lucien always wearing a pink shirt, kind of, it was a muted colour, like a pastel, but it still made him pop out of a crowd and out of the scenery and everything. It was really interesting and well done, I thought.
Yeah, I must admit that that's almost pretty much saved the film.
Yeah.
For me. Otherwise, I would absolutely think it would be shit. But it's still interesting to look at. It's still interesting to watch in that sense.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, you know what I thought was really interesting about it was that there's a critical point where you meet his... You said he's the colonel?
Yep.
His military friend. And
the captain. We meet the colonel later on.
Sorry, the captain. And they're playing pool in the public house. And... everyone is fucking racist.
Yes.
Right? And it's a... I wasn't drawn in by Lucien until he kind of bashed heads with the racist soldiers.
The scene where he's saying that his town has... it's 1,275 souls?
Yeah.
Like, no, black people don't have souls.
So therefore you're wrong. And then there's this nice...
It's
nice dialogue between the two where it's like some kind of philosophy trying to break down why isn't a Negro have a soul?
Yeah, because what makes
a man have
a soul? Clearly has become accustomed to... He's lived there long enough and he has a good rapport and clearly cares about the people in his village, and yeah, so he is like, no, they're fucking people too, you pricks.
Yeah. So I thought that that was the point. I mean, it's like 15-20 minutes in.
Yeah.
So I'm clutching at this point for something to grab me, and that grabbed me.
Yeah.
To the point where you go like, oh, this guy's morals are actually quite in check.
Yes.
That was my point.
But were you kind of going on the route of like, he has interesting, the morals are established there, like, oh, yeah, he has clear morals about like race and like the important issues like that, yet when it comes to justice, they're kind of more blurred. Is that kind of where you were going, or?
No, sorry, I fucking, no, I wasn't talking about that. I got derailed by my own.
No, it's all good. But I mean, if we could kind of continue on the racist slant for a little while.
Yeah, this is what I was talking about.
Oh, cool. Yep.
Okay, so he's, that point, pretty early in the film, you think the film is going to be about racism is going to be one of, like, pretty much a main thing. But then, strangely, all of the black people were just in the background all of the time. And there's no... I thought it kind of odd and almost had this surreal quality about the film, just because no main characters were necessarily... Like, no main characters were black.
Yeah.
And there's always conflict between main characters, and in the background, they're having conflicts with black people directly. But there's this weird atmosphere within the scenes that even the camera doesn't really give credence to the black people in the village.
Okay.
Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, I see where you're going.
It's like this
that,
odd
yeah.
thing throughout the whole film.
Well, I guess I could
always
argue
in the background
that
being
whole
mistreated.
Thing. Yeah. Well, that could be, like, you could view that as the director obviously putting the audience in the perspective of these white people who are kind of characters for this film.
Mm.
They don't have much of a regard for black people, apart from Lucien, who has somewhat, and therefore you get, you know, some slight ones like Fate Nat, his assistant at the police station. Like, you get these little glimpses of a few black people, but for the most part, yeah, because our characters don't care about them, we don't care about them, and they're not important to the story, so they're not really presented, I guess.
Yeah, I thought it was so strange to present that. It was like, it happened enough times that it becomes quite a big point in the film.
Well,
but by themselves, they're just these small, little, subtle events that occur throughout the film.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was really interesting as well. Let me just double check on my notes and how I wrote this down. It's kind of an interesting contrast to, like, the way the white people in this film talk about and treat the black people as if they're savages, they're not humans, and, you know, all your standard racism.
Yeah, yeah.
But meanwhile, in this film, we are watching the white people be absolutely brutal in, like...
Like fucking animals, man.
Yeah, like, in violence, beating up of women, their fucking social ways that they behave, the way that they eat, they drink, they're fucking animals. They're disgusting.
Yeah.
Whereas all the natives, all the Africans in the village, are totally polite, nice, normal, calm human beings.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting kind of subversion.
That's what I mean. That's what makes it kind of this odd surrealism.
Yeah, yeah. Yet you see these horrible people talk about how horrible these other people are when these other people are like, man, I'm just sitting here.
Yeah, they're literally just sitting there copping shit from white people.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, white people are completely beasts just fucking tramping around.
It's super interesting and it has this nice... I think that adds a good layer to the film.
Mm, absolutely.
I don't know if it was probably the whole... kind of continuing on with that whole interesting setting of, you know, this obviously being in French West Africa. It reminded me a little bit of The Harder They Come, that Jimmy Cliff reggae movie from Jamaica.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily in terms of, like, you know, they're polar opposite stories and things, but it's like a very specific look at a certain place and a certain time, which I thought was kind of interesting, and it's something that you don't often see in a kind of from this perspective. Like, you know, we've seen West Africa in kind of multiple Hollywood films and stuff, but it's very rare that you kind of get to see it on a low budget, low scale, kind of gritty version like this, which I thought was an interesting kind of take on it. And
I didn't even know there was French villages in Africa in that period.
Yeah, no, they occupied a lot of Africa for a
is
very
that
long
true?
Time. Yes.
Wow.
Mm.
Well, I feel totally non-worldly.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm here to learn. I don't have, you know, I don't have much to say about this film. I gotta say that I got bored through a lot of it.
So, I was gonna say, because points I... One of the things I really loved and made me connect was the performances.
Mm.
I thought everyone was doing a fucking fantastic job. Lucien, I thought, obviously, like, yeah, I've talked a lot about him so far. I think he just absolutely owned his character there. Isabelle Huppert, I thought, was really good, as she always is, as Rose, the mistress. And his wife and supposed brother-in-law made me fucking hate them. So, I mean, they did their job.
Yeah, yeah.
They were... Everyone did really effective performances, I thought, and believable that kind of... they kind of really pulled me into the story. So.
Yeah, they were... They did a good job. But I just... I was trying to figure out why... I think that it's just, on the whole, the characters were...
There wasn't a clear enough
really
line for...
I don't really want to say superficial.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they weren't...
But they were. They were.
There was... They irritated me. The way they were presented irritated me.
Yeah.
The fact that you can't get into their minds. There's always something blocking me from...
Everyone was very one-dimensional, apart from Lucien.
Mm.
And I...
But even him, I'm not really privy to his thought processes,
yeah.
I felt. Like, I'm just watching a man carry out actions.
Yeah.
Without... I never felt like I could understand him. I never felt like I was presented a sequence of images or a sequence of words or watching a dialogue that allowed... Like, a monologue, for fuck's sake. Give me something.
Yeah. See, that's what's interesting, because I was feeling that way throughout the entire film, but I had a sense of this... It's like that the voiceover at the beginning of Magnolia. Don't worry, this will all make sense in the end. Like, I kind of had this assured feeling of, like, I'm enjoying this film.
It didn't make sense to me in the end.
But, like, that's, I think, the way that I read into it, of, like, this has all been planned. Like, this was all a giant, elaborate plan by Lucien to end up with all of his troubles gone. And, again, coming back to the title, a clean slate, he can start fresh in the village with no ties. And
so selfish.
Yeah, yeah. Because, again, drawing back to the thing, it's a... sleazy kind of pulp novel. He's not a good person.
He's not a hero.
No.
Is he even... He's not a...
But he's a cool character,
either.
I thought.
Yeah. Is he... Would you say that he's an anti-hero? Like, he's doing criminal acts, essentially, but is he an anti-hero?
No, because he's not necessarily... The only person he's standing up for is himself.
Mm. Because even when he's doing...
He's a protagonist. he's not a hero, he's not an anti-hero, he's a man who is very self-absorbed. He does have those flourishing moments of... He does clearly care about the town and the people that live in it. But himself first. It is self-preservation above others.
Like, is he killing...
Like, the prime example is the guy who drops off the body of the his lover's husband.
Hmm.
And she's kind of pissed off at him and screaming and lets slip that Lucien killed her husband. And he's like, well, fuck, now I gotta kill this guy. Because I need to tie up all of these loose ends to make my plan, like, this thing work.
Because it's my justice, not justice.
Because he had it perfectly set up before that... Marcel, the husband, slipped and shot him, fell on his own gun and killed himself.
Yeah.
Now he has to elaborate and make a more bullshitty lie of, like, oh, these guys killed each other, which is, like, it's starting...
Well, he kills an innocent...
Yes, because he needs to make his plan work. So he's not a hero, and he's not an anti-hero, I don't think, because of that.
So what is the fucking... What do you find that there's a point? Like, if you're...
Not
going,
really,
if you're...
It's just a fun, little interesting story. And I'm not sure if it is because I've recently read some Jim Thompson. I'm kind of in that little bit of a mindset with it and, like, kind of had that pre-recognition going in of, like, oh, I have a sense of what this is going to be. Like, seeing his name in the opening credits. Mm-hmm. That probably helped and informed where I went with the film. And if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't enjoy it as much and kind of put all these little things onto it, I guess.
Did you find it was funny?
I didn't laugh.
It's supposed to be a black comedy.
There were elements where, like, they're trying to be funny here.
Yeah.
I didn't laugh at them necessarily, but, like...
Yeah, me neither.
They were clearly trying to put some levity into it, but it just didn't land, I guess.
Do you reckon it's like a French... It's a French black humour, and then that humour... That kind of brand of humour.
Yeah.
doesn't really. I think it's well almost
it's like a comedy in the sense that Reservoir Dogs is a comedy. Like,
but I think that's a funny movie. I think that's a good black comedy.
When was the last time you rewatched it? It's nowhere near as funny as Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown. Like, it's not quite. It doesn't have as much laughs as this other stuff. It actually plays a lot straighter.
Okay. And then, I haven't seen that in a long time, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
That being said, Reservoir Dogs is way funnier than this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I thought that was lackluster comedy.
Yeah. But yeah, I think.
I feel bad.
No. I mean, it's fine. It makes for a good discussion. Like, I mean, now you know how I've been feeling the last couple of episodes when I've been ragging on shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't want to. I want to have a better. I want to understand it more before I. It's too. I don't really have an opinion that's kind of concrete yet.
Yeah.
So, and plus, what's more is, I don't think I ever will.
It's not one you're going to go back and rewatch.
I don't think I'll rewatch it. So I read a lot of I read Roger Ebert's review.
Yep.
And
what did he say about it?
Well, he gave it a 2.5 stars.
Out of four.
And he kind of, it seemed like he also was, felt that he couldn't really grab onto any characters either.
Okay.
Which made me feel better.
That would have been an interesting element if they had added in a kind of, a voiceover for Lucien to help kind of explain his motivations and what he was going through. It would have, I think, they probably didn't because it makes it too obvious that they're going for the noir slant, and they wanted to be really subtle with that. Like, I think almost the music was a little bit too much. Like, the jazzy soundtrack was, like, one of the only giveaways of, like,
okay,
this is what we're doing, and I think...
But then it's a lesser film for it.
Yeah, if they leaned on those elements a little bit harder in this interesting location and interesting setting, it would have made for a better film, probably.
Yeah, because it's... So what... We're probably throwing words into the makers' mouths.
Yeah, obviously.
By saying that... They wanted to make a film noir film without making it a film noir.
That's true, but that's my reading of it at least.
Yeah,
like I'll add that caveat of like that.
But if they did do that, then to say, well, we're not going to do narration because we
want to be subtle about it.
Well, because we're doing a film noir film that's not too film noir film, therefore we're not going to do narrations.
Yeah.
Then, like that would be almost like. It'll be almost retarded because you're going, yeah, but the narration works so well, why would you just not put it in? Because you know, you just don't want to be a film noir film but kind of want to be a noir film.
Yeah, I guess.
But again, it's silly because we're putting
we're making those assumptions onto the film. Yeah, I don't know, like,
so I don't know, the characters were irritating because I felt like I was never given the opportunity to understand them.
Okay.
There is one moment, I almost want to just rewatch this one little segment. I can't remember what Lucien said, but there is, towards the end, he is sitting in...
He's sitting with Rose and talking about God and...
Yeah, and it felt like kind of, he was trying to formulate some explanation of why he's doing the things he's doing.
But he himself can't even form it.
Yeah, but even he is kind of like, I don't really know.
But see, I viewed that as the film being playful and like, being a little bit self-aware of like, our protagonist. Like, we don't even really know what this is, I guess. Like, I kind of, for everything, like those character points that you didn't like the film, it kind of, that's what I kind of enjoyed about it. So it's kind of interesting.
It is kind of interesting.
Yes.
And then I don't know what to do then.
Like,
I don't know.
We're just going to end up bashing heads for like 40 minutes otherwise.
Because you've got to just let bygones be bygones at this point and go like, all right, you know.
Yeah, I liked it. You didn't know.
I liked it because of these reasons and you hated it because of the same reasons.
So, shit.
So, you know. Let's watch the next film in the collection, kind of thing.
No, well, pretty much almost.
I don't know. I mean, like, what else is there then? I still don't understand. I don't know if I can understand it, so I'm not gonna. I don't know whether I should bother.
Well, were there any kind of filmic elements that you thought stood out? Like, you mentioned obviously the color palette earlier. Was there anything like? And you also said the camera work, the kind of long, kind of tracking, walking shots that were done handheld. Were there any other kind of nice elements that you thought made it a watchable?
The strongest points in the film.
Yep.
for me were the points. It was almost like a Tarantino scene where there's dialogue, and it happens a few times, and it's always somebody gets killed at the end of these scenes.
Yeah,
there's dialogue, and it kind of ramps up, the tension ramps up, ramps up. It's the killing the pimps sequence.
Yep.
And all of a sudden there's this surprising release of tension where the gun is fired.
Yeah.
The same thing happens when his lover, we haven't really been using many names.
Rose.
When Rose's husband is shot. So there's these kind of Tarantino-esque sequences.
Yeah.
Building tension, then this really quick release. And those were the strongest scenes for me. Only because those scenes alone, out of context, are still kind of fascinating.
They hold up and they, yeah.
So I can ignore all of the other stuff I didn't like and just go, yes, this scene is fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Really engrossing. And, you know, like the... There's a lot of sequences where the camera was allowed to just wander. There's no shaky cam, really, but there's, but it's kind of that good version of somebody wandering around with a camera.
Yeah, it was shaky, steady cam before steady cam.
Yeah,
and it, you know, you can. There's a little bit of a wobble to it, but it's not like Paul Greengrass Bourne Identity bullshit.
Yeah, not that like sickening.
Yeah,
crap. Where you want to be in on the conversation, but you don't need to be fucking, you know, having too much caffeine.
Yeah.
It was fly on the wall stuff. I liked how the camera was allowed to just follow people around and you get to take in just the awesome locations.
Yes.
And take in again the color palettes. But that is just a. That's not really. It's like just an aesthetic pleasure.
Yeah. Like, sure as shit made me want to kind of actually visit Africa. That place looked really cool.
Yeah, but there's super fucked up French people there.
Well,
that's in the.
It's not 1938.
Maybe it's better since then.
Yeah. But yeah, to be honest, I kind of went into this one figuring it was going to be a short episode because, you know, it's a fun movie, but there's really not all that, you're right, there's not all that much to latch on to, and, you know, without, I think if we kept going, we'd kind of end up going in circles.
I agree. It's quite polarizing.
Yes.
If you go to the IMDb reviews,
yeah,
there's people that fucking love the movie for every reason.
Yep.
And then there's people that are like, I don't understand the characters, and I don't like them, and there's a barrier there.
Mm.
And some of them explain it really well, and some of them don't, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Going to IMDb reviews.
It's the internet. I enjoyed the film a lot. I didn't necessarily love it. You know, I'm probably in that Roger Ebert camp of, like, you know, 2.5 out of 4, kind of, you know, I enjoyed
it. Well, I am as well.
Yeah.
I am as well.
But
probably 2 out of 4. I loved the way it was made.
Yes.
I thought it was, it had so many good qualities, but the characters were just, the characters were quite strong too. It's just that.
You didn't have anything that you found to connect with them.
There's no point to the movie. It did.
Yeah.
There's very little point, like, large grand point to the film. I felt so.
No, I totally agree. But yeah.
Mm.
I know I like it. but do you want to hear a little bit of trivia about it?
Yes.
So the film was actually nominated for the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film at the 1983 Academy Awards.
Holy shit!
Yeah, man, Oscars!
The Oscars are so important.
Especially, you know, since Spotlight won.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to trivia. The singer Eddie Mitchell is in. This is one of his first major fictional roles for the first time. He thought he was so bad after watching the dailies that he insisted to do some of the scenes over again. He was the guy who played Nono, the brother-in-law who was like having the vaguely brother-in-law who's not really the brother-in-law who's having the oddly incestuous relationship.
Yeah, well, yeah, you don't know if it's actually
But
they call themselves brother and sister, kind of thing.
Yeah. Because he thought he was so bad, he wanted to shoot some of his scenes again. Because no one else would agree, he jokingly stated, "Since I'm actually the richest person on the crew, I'll pay for all of these scenes to be allowed to be, so we can do them once again." And he was almost taken seriously by the production, who were just like, "Just fuck off, man." No.
Yeah.
And from
you
then
had
on,
a chance.
Yeah. From then on, he never went to watch the dailies ever again.
Huh.
Yeah. Tavernier, the director, has said that Coup de Tachon is about revenge. This is a quote from him. "It's about revenge, of course, but it's also about something else as well. It's about God and free will, and it has a lot of religion and metaphysical implications, some of which Jean Orange and I invented, the guy you co-wrote the script with, and some of which that are in Jim Thompson's book.
So this, this is funny because we didn't talk about pretty much... we didn't talk about any metaphysical stuff. Oh, kind of...
A little bit, but
morality, I guess, but...
Yeah, but those are the elements I feel are the ones that are just kind of thrown at it, and it's not really the meat and bones of... the very little meat and bones that is actually there on the narrative, I feel. It seems like these are just kind of little elements thrown into it on top.
Maybe. Who the fuck knows?
Because, I don't know.
Because he reckons that he's done something really grand with this film. And some people agree that it's a really grand film. And then some people think that it's... no point to it.
Yep.
So, who's right? Everybody's right, maybe.
Everyone's right, everyone's wrong.
Everyone's right.
Film is subjective. Yeah.
This is the most irritating part about fucking film discussions.
Yeah, it's because like, there is no...
Who cares? Like, it doesn't matter?
Yeah. No.
But then maybe, I don't know. Depends if you can fucking... what's the point in doing this podcast then?
Watching some good films and talking about them. This is where the metaphysical physical has come in. It's made you actually doubt and question why are we even doing this?
I'm all existential now.
Yeah. I know.
Let's just keep doing it. I fear change.
So we'll talk about the actual Criterion edition itself. Unfortunately, the film is actually out of print from Criterion, but if you're able to track down a copy of the one-disc DVD, it comes with the following special features. An exclusive video interview with director Bertrand Tavernier, an alternate ending, as well as a US theatrical trailer, and the usual booklet and essays Criterion always do.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like your average release.
Pretty much. Nothing too fancy. Just standard.
Would you buy it?
No. I enjoyed it, but it's not one I necessarily need to own or see again. Especially since it's out of print.
Is that your checklist is, if I want to own it because I will see it again?
Yes.
That's pretty much like the only thing that...
Why else buy it? Would you buy something?
Well, it might get amazing special features.
Yeah, that's... Okay, yeah. Even
if you didn't feel like you needed to see something again, maybe you want to learn a bit more about it still.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for the day where special features are available as digital download stuff.
Yeah.
I'm surprised
that's not a thing already, right?
I know, right? It's kind of baffling.
There should be packages.
Yeah. Like, certain people do it, like independent producers, but... Yeah, major places don't. It's kind of a bummer.
But then it is... There's something to be said about owning that tangible item.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That's why...
And that's only the collector in me, though.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. Like, there will always be a market for collectors, which is, you know...
It's funny, because the digital thing is super handy, but it's not... doesn't feel special.
No, it's not at all, because it's not something tangible you can hold in your hand.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, it's a collectible USB. I don't know. I don't know. We should really quit our rambling and wrap up this week's episode.
This film's just like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore.
We'll probably wrap up this week's episode looking at Coupe de Torchon, aka Clean Slate. If you have any comments or queries, or you have an answer to the big question, when you scratch your balls, is it because it itches or because it feels good? Please send us an email at the Criterion Quest or hit us up on Twitter at Criterion Quest.
Is that that's a quote from the film?
Yes, it is.
Yep. Some more metaphysical shit right there.
Yep. But we will be back next week, hopefully with something a little bit less metaphysical and kind of more straightforward.
Does it feel good? Or?
I actually haven't seen next week's film.
Does your balls feel good?
Or
do they itch?
My question is, why can't it be both?
Alright.
But I will be back next week when we look at Neil Jordan's film Mona Lisa, starring Bob Hoskins and Michael Caine.
Rad.
A British gangster film I've never seen that I am looking forward to.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
But for this week's episode, I'm Chris.
I'm Tom. See you next time.